What do you see when you see the world? What do you view when you view the world? What do you see first and most? Is it President Trump? Is it the United States of America, the world's really only superpower? Or is it yourself? Or is it Christ first and Christ most? Another question, what do you see when you view the church? What do you think of when you think of the church? Is it maybe a pastor or the loss of a pastor? Is it a building? Is it a federation of churches? Is it maybe yourself and your own role in the church? Or is it Christ first and most? Another question. What do you see when you see heaven? What do you think of when you think of heaven? Maybe loved ones who have gone before you. Maybe yourself, what it'll be like for you. Or is it Christ first and most? What these questions and your answers to them reveal is whether or not Christ is supreme in your world view, in your view of this world, the creation, in your view of the church, the recreation, and your view of heaven, the new creation. And if Christ is not supreme in our view of this world, it has certain damaging consequences to us. If Christ is not supreme in our view of this world, the creation, then we lose awareness of Christ. We lose Christ consciousness. If he's not supreme in our view of the church, where God is recreating, then we lose Christ worship. And if we lose the supremacy of Christ in our view of the new heavens and the new earth, the new creation, then we lose Christ hope. Our hope of Christ fades. I'm sure none of us want these things to happen, and therefore we want to ask ourselves, how do we restore the supremacy of Christ to our worldview, our view of this world, this church, and the new heavens and the new earth, so that we can restore Christ consciousness, Christ worship, and Christ hope? That's what the apostle helps us to do in this passage. And he was addressing a situation where certain heretics had come into the church. We've met them already. They're called Gnostics or know-it-alls. And they promoted many ways to get to heaven and in consequence demoted Christ. Christ was not supreme in their worldview. He was just one of many ways to get to heaven. He was certainly not first and he was certainly not most. He was just one of many. And this was having an impact on the Colossian church, and therefore the apostle here works to restore the supremacy of Christ in this church so as to increase their Christ awareness, their Christ worship, and their Christ hope. Let's join the apostle as he does this and hopefully rebuild and restore the supremacy of Christ in our own worldview. The first way he does this is he shows us how Christ is supreme in the first creation. Christ is supreme in the first creation, and he's speaking here about Christ's relationship to this world. He tells us three truths about Christ's relationship to the world. And the first truth is this: he is the beginning of all things. Verse 15, he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. He's the beginning of all things. And this is brought to us with a couple of different expressions. This one, first of all, the image of the invisible God. Now, we know that humanity was made in the image of God, but before God made humanity in his image, there was a divine person in his image. That is Jesus Christ. He was in the image of God before Adam and Eve or anyone else was made in the image of God. And as God's image, he made visible what is invisible in God. He's the image of the invisible God. He's also here described as the firstborn over all creation. Now, this word firstborn in both the Old and New Testaments has the meaning of a first in love, in authority, and in power. That's not what we think of, perhaps, when we hear the word firstborn. We think of the first one born after many others being born. And therefore, we might be tempted to think, oh, Christ had a beginning. He was born, and he's just the first of many others after him. And that's indeed what the Gnostics taught. But that's not how this word is used in either the Old or the New Testaments. No. It's not saying Christ is just the first of many creatures. He is first in power and sovereignty and love, and therefore over all creation. He's the firstborn over all creation. And that's because he is the creator of all creation. That's what the apostle goes on to speak of. He says, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth. And then he goes on to list with names that the know-it-alls would recognize, all the other intermediaries and emanations that they said were similar to Christ, all the other ways to God. And here the apostle lists them. He says that they are thrones, powers, rulers, authorities. And the apostle says, oh, all of these things are created by Christ. If they exist at all, they have their existence because Christ gave them existence. He's the creator of all things. All things went out from him. But then, we're told he's not only the beginning of all things, as the image of God, the firstborn of all creation, and the creator of all things. He's not only the beginning of all things, he's the end of all things. If you notice in verse 16, it says at the end, all things were created by him and for him. For him. Very important little words here. By him, from him, and for him. Prepositions. Very important in Paul's writings. And he's telling us Christ is related to everything. He's connected to everything. Everything not only went out from him, but one day is going to come back to him. All creation is his creation, and it was made to serve him, for him, to him, towards him. Everything was made to have this orientation, this direction, this momentum towards this great Christ. He's the beginning and the end of all things. You might ask, well, what about the in-between? He's the beginning and is the end. Well, that's what Paul goes on to tell us about. In verse 17, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. It's a beautiful phrase. Christ didn't just make everything and then walk away to come back at the end of time and see how things are. No, we're told that in between the beginning and the end, he's holding everything together. It's a word that really could be translated in our modern language as glued. He's the glue that holds everything together. In other words, if he did walk away, everything would fall apart. You are glued together. You hold together only because Christ is holding you together. Our society holds together. Our government, our nations, our planets keep spinning and orbiting. Stars don't fall from the sky into our society. Why? Because in him all things hold together. together. That changes the way you view the world, doesn't it? He's the beginning of all things. He's the end of all things, and he holds together all things. In other words, you and I, all of us here, were made by him and for him, and we exist just now because of him. Therefore, where is he in your life? Is he supreme in your mind, in your heart, in your worship, in your words, and in your actions? That's why he made you. He made you to be for him, in him, towards him. If you're not, then why not use these words as a prayer of confession? Lord, you are not first and most in my world. I am first and most in my world. And I know that's not how you made me to be. Therefore, come and be supreme in my life, in my world. And even if he is first and most of the time, surely all of us here can say it can be for more of the time. Can we not come to him with that prayer also? Lord, however much I live for you, I know I can live for you more. Be first all the time. Be most all the time. How can we help ourselves do this? You know, it's very hard to form a new habit, isn't it? Probably many of you try to form a new habit on the 1st of January, and it's probably distant history already. There's been a lot of research into habit science, and apparently one of the best ways you can build a new habit is associate it with an existing habit. So that, for example, if you want to start, say, flossing your teeth, the best way to do that is to attach it to something you already do with your teeth, like brushing them in the morning or at night. And so we want to ask ourselves, if I want Christ more supreme in my worldview, what can I associate that with that I do every day, lots of times a day? Let me make a suggestion to you. This. Apparently, even the most digitally sober of us interact with our phones an average of 30 to 40 times a day. And those of us who are digitally drunk, it's somewhere in the region of 150 to 200 times. You imagine if every time that beeped or buzzed, or you picked it up to text someone, you shot a thought towards Christ, or you brought that person or that communication to Christ for blessing or wisdom or direction, you think of how Christ would expand in your worldview, how you would bring him into everything in your world. And Christ would be supreme in all things. Is that not worth cultivating, trying? If Christ is not first and most in our world, then we are least and lost in this world. You might say, well, I mean, I look out at this creation and this world, and it's very broken and it's very dysfunctional. Can Christ do anything about that? And that's where the apostle takes us next. He takes us to the recreation. He's spoken of the original creation, this world. Then he turns to where he is recreating his broken and dysfunctional world. And where does he take us there? He takes us to the church, believe it or not. Yeah, the church. Notice verse 18, and he is the head of the body, the church. He's supreme in the creation, and he's supreme in the recreation, his church. How does the apostle bring this to us? He does it in two ways. He tells us, first of all, Christ is the head of the church. You might hear this and you think, this is a bit of a letdown, is it not? I mean, we've been talking about the whole universe, the whole creation, the heavens and the earth, and Christ's supremacy there, and now we're going to talk about the little old church. This seems like we're going from the greater to the smaller, from the most important to something of marginal importance. Far from it. Quite the reverse. The church is far more important than the world. The church is far more important than the first creation. Indeed, the creation exists for the church and for God's people. All things, says Paul in Romans 8, work together for the good of those who love him. He's saying this whole creation, this whole universe, in all its massiveness, is but a servant to the church and the people of God. Everything he's doing in the world is for the church. Everything he's doing in the universe is for the church, is for God's people. Yes, he's the head of the first creation, but he's also head of the recreation. The broken humanity in the first creation is being remade and recreated. In this recreation, he is the head of the body, the church. The creation exists for the sake of the church. As the head of the new first creation, he created humanity. As the head of the recreation, he's recreating humanity. He's remaking society. He's the head of the church, but he's also the life of the church. It says in verse 18, as the head of the body of the church, he is the beginning and the first born from among the dead. Again, we meet this word firstborn. It was there when we were speaking of the original creation and now in the recreation. And it's the same meaning. He's first in terms of power and love and sovereignty in the church. We're told here he is to have supremacy in all things, including the church. You might read that and think, well, firstborn from the dead, there were others who resurrected from the dead, were there not? How can it be said that he's the firstborn from the dead when even Christ himself raised the dead before this and even an Old Testament prophet did it? Well, here's the difference. These prior resurrections were not resurrections. They were resuscitations. When these people were raised from the dead, they were raised to the same life they had before. A life that was dying, a life that would one day die again. But Christ, when he was raised with the power of an endless life. He was raised never to die again. That's a resurrection. All the rest are resuscitation. And that's why he's called the firstborn from the dead. And what we're being told here is this resurrection life power, this unique, one-of-a-kind resurrection power, the power of an endless life, actually flows into the church. That's what keeps this church going, pulsing, throbbing, the resurrection power of Jesus Christ. That's what keeps the people of God, the people of God. The firstborn from among the dead. He's the life of the old creation, and he's the life of this recreation. So, if you're here today and you know you're broken and dysfunctional, you know you're not the creature that you could be and should be, and you want to be remade and repaired, where do you go? You go to the one who is the remaker of humanity. And you come to the place where he does that remaking, the church. This is where he is head. This is where he is the life of the church. This is where you get remade. How much do you want remade? This is where he does that work. And you want to ask, don't you, is Christ preeminent in this church? Is he preeminent in your thoughts when you come to church, when you serve the church, as you teach Sunday school perhaps, as you open the doors, as you valet the cars, whatever you do here for Christ? Do you bring Christ into that? Do you say, I'm doing this by his power, for his glory, for his precious people? And that way you can expand the supremacy of Christ in the recreation, in the church, amongst the people of God. One of the ways I try myself to keep Christ worship alive in my life between Sundays is listen to praise and worship songs through the week. I used to listen to a lot of talk radio, which is really debilitating, and it can be really depressing, can't it? I started listening to praise music, and it just changes your whole way of looking at yourself. You can't wait to get to church again on Sunday where you can lift your voice with others, not just make a joyful noise in your car. And that way we can maybe begin to increase and lift up Christ among us even more than he is. Is that not what we want? This all really comes together in a beautiful song. This idea of the creation and of worship, Christ consciousness and Christ worship. If the stars were made to worship, so will I. If the mountains bow in reverence, so will I. If the oceans roar your greatness, so will I. If everything exists to lift you high, so will I. If the wind goes where you send it, so will I. If the rocks cry out in silence, so will I. If the sum of all our praises still falls shy, we'll sing again 100 billion times. There's a song that lifts up the supremacy of Christ in this creation and in the re-creation. Christ is not supreme in your heart if the church is not supreme in your life. You might say, well, the church is pretty broken and dysfunctional too, you know. Can Christ do anything about that? Yes, he's remaking humanity and society, and yet, look at us. We're pretty messed up ourselves. Can Christ do anything about that? Yes, he can. And the apostle takes us then to the new creation. He's gone from the old creation to the recreation to the new creation, the new heavens and the new earth. You notice in verse 19, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Now, it might look on first reading that this is actually referring back to Christ's death on the cross, where he reconciled God's people to himself. But actually, although that's a truth, the full reconciliation is not until heaven, the new heavens and the new earth, where dwells righteousness. You look here, for example, it tells us he's the fullness of God. God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him. Again, this is very much contrary to the know-it-alls who, who basically said, well, there's all these spirits, all these mediators, all these emanations, all these steps that we can use to get to God, and together that forms the fullness of God. No, says the apostle. All the fullness of God is in Christ and nowhere else. Nowhere else. And yes, the fullness of God was seen in him in his incarnate life, in his life, his sufferings, his death and resurrection, but it will be seen in even greater fullness in the new heavens and the new earth. There, the fullness of God in Christ will be fully manifested and fully recognized. He will have preeminence in all things. He's the fullness of God, and then we're told he's the reconciler to God. Now, yes, it refers to his cross and the blood he shed on it. That past reconciliation is the basis for all future reconciliation. Your only hope, my only hope, for reconciliation to God in this world. But no matter how much reconciling he is doing and has done and will yet do here, we're going to be nowhere near all things reconciled to him in this world. And that's what this is pointing us towards, a much greater, wider reconciliation. Much greater restoration of friendship between God and his creatures. And it might, again on first reading, imply that everything he ever made is going to be reconciled to him. If you just read the language, through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven. Now, we know from the apostles' other writings that he was no universalist. He did not believe that everything, every creature, every person ever created would one day be reconciled to God and brought into friendship with God. No. The apostle's crystal clear in that, and he's not inconsistent in it. What he's speaking about here is the new heavens and the new earth. That's where his view is. And when he looks at that, he sees all things reconciled to God. All who die rebels to God, or all who remain rebels when Christ returns, will remain rebels and enemies for all eternity. They are excluded from the new creation, the new heavens, and the new earth. Only righteousness dwells there. But here he's looking forward, and he's seeing this new creation where not one part of it is opposed to Christ. And not one part of each person there is opposed to Christ. Because we know that even in this world, there's so much that remains in us opposed to him, isn't there? His lordship is not complete, but it will be in us, over us, and over all things. Not one part of Christ's new creation will be opposed to him. His death in history transforms the whole of eternity. Through his death in the world, new life flows into the world. God was pleased to have his fullness dwell in him because he wanted his fullness to dwell in the world. God is pleased with this. He looks at Christ as this his fullness and his reconciler. And he says, I am so pleased with this. And he's inviting us to be similarly pleased. He says, well, if God's pleased with him as his fullness and his reconciler, the one who befriends sinners and brings them into relationship with God, surely I should be too. My reconciler to God. You don't want to pray, Lord, your Father's fullness and your Father's friendliness, come and fill me and befriend me so that I might have your fullness and friendliness in the future. Indeed, for all future. Life without Christ is emptiness and nothingness. But heaven with Christ is fullness and enoughness. To reveal the kingdom coming. To reconcile the lost. To redeem the whole creation. He did not despise the cross. Do you see how Paul here helps the Colossians and us restore the supremacy of Christ in all things? Instead of no consciousness of Christ, there's Christ consciousness in all creation. Instead of no worship, there's Christ worship when we come to church. Instead of no hope, there's even greater hope as we look ahead. As Christ expands in our view of this world and of the church, he expands in our view of heaven and our future. Doesn't that lift us up as it lifts him up? What a solution the Apostle Paul has here for us. Is Christ supreme in your worldview? Is he first and most as you look at this world? This verse calls us to live for Christ as supreme in all places and at all times, to increase Christ worship, Christ hope, and Christ awareness. Is he worthy? Is he worthy of all blessing and honor and glory? Is he worthy? Is he worthy? Is he worthy of this? He is. He is. He is.